And welcome back, everybody, to Game Store Profits, episode 106. My name is Jeff Romo, and this is the podcast all about geeky stuff and the Lord, and how those two things are not mutually exclusive. Now, you'll notice that I'm not here with my loyal comrade, Mike Perna. That's because he is off in Indianapolis enjoying Gen Con. Now, not going to lie, little bit jealous, but I'm getting plenty of pictures back from him, and I'm sure if you guys out there following us on Facebook in the tavern are able to see just the sort of just amazing stuff that he's getting himself up to. Been able to meet up with a bunch of the folks from the tavern, as well as the geek preacher, Mr. Derek White, so big shout out to him. It looks like everybody there is having a great time. As for me, I have been able to get back to my regular game on Sunday nights. I missed last week with my old friends, playing a little bit of Shadowrun First Edition. Had some fun, and I have to admit that I made a change in the way I throw down the game, and in that I went off book. I had a whole bunch of stuff written, pre-written stuff. I'm even using module material, and I realized that as they start hitting certain hurdles, I'm spending too much time diving into the book and saying, hang on, one second while I research this. Realizing, you know what, it's so much more fun to go extemporaneous and really feed off of what they get in the adventure. In addition, I've been prepping for our Inroads Plays Victoriana. It's been the usual story the last couple episodes, but we have officially locked down our adventuring party. And we'll be meeting up here in the next couple weeks to start the process of character creation. I'll throw out a little tidbit on technology. It's really cool to have a messenger app, whether it's the Facebook or WhatsApp or whatever you want to call it, whatever your tool of choice is. But to be able to kind of group that chat together and be able to go back and forth and voice ideas and come up with tone and come up with character creation items and, you know, backgrounds and everything that people can kind of feed off of at any given point in the day. Really huge help. Really huge help in kind of getting things off the ground. So big shout out to the group. If you guys are listening, I'm really looking forward to the next couple weeks and what it brings. One of the other things that I've been diving into with regards to Victoriana is Roll20. It's a online virtual tabletop that serves as a way for people across the country or maybe across your county to get together online and play role-playing games. And I think in some cases, people have been creating digital or virtual renditions of game boards and playing board games that way as well. And as part of the Victoriana prep, I had some fun putting together some macros on there. So if any of you guys have ever done that, it's not easy in some cases. Roll20, though, makes it about as easy as it possibly can be, you know, given all the different types of tech that's out there. I heard some interesting news that out of Gen Con 2015 that they did win the Annie for Best Software in Role-Playing Games. So definitely awesome to hear about that, especially regarding a tool that is near and dear to my heart when it comes to role-playing games. So lots of fun to hear about that. Way to go, you guys. Now, what has Jeff been playing the last couple weeks other than role-playing games? Let's put that aside. Let's jump into some board games. I got a chance to go out with a couple of buds, and they're part of an old role-playing group, similar circles as what we do with Shadowrun. But we play D&D off and on. And this time, we decided to pick up a board game and play Lords of Waterdeep. I'm sure people have heard about it. It's by Peter Lee and Rodney Thompson over at WotC. It's based on Dungeons & Dragons. It's based in the City of Splendor, the most popular Faerun city out there, Waterdeep. And as opposed to being a band of adventurers where you're kind of running around from one quest to the next, you're actually the shadowy puppet masters running the grand city of Splendor from behind the scenes. It's for 2 to 5 players. You could basically call it like a worker placement and a resource gathering, but it's got a really interesting twist to it in that you are, again, kind of working as these shadowy lords running the city. So basically what you'll do is you'll have certain factions that in and of themselves don't have special abilities. But within those factions, you start off with agents that are meant to travel about the city. And then you maintain in that faction what's called a tavern. And that's where you put your completed quests and also where you keep your adventurers, you know, people like your wizards, your rogues, your clerics, and your fighters. But what's really cool is that the character, as it were, that you're playing is a secret lord of Waterdeep. Nobody else knows who you are, but that particular character is what gives you some special bonuses and also instances of how you would win the game. Now, each round, you place your agent on the board, and based on locations, you acquire certain resources. Whether you're in a particular area where you would gather a cleric, you know, like if you're in a church, or if you're in another area where you would gather, like training yards, where you would gather a fighter, that sort of thing. You can also go into what's called the Builder's Hall, where you pay for a particular location, you build it, and assign your marker. And it's, I don't know, the worst kind of thing I guess I could probably make as an allusion would be to Monopoly, in that, you know, as people travel through there, you get certain bonuses, even if you're not in position on that spot. Basically, as the owner, you get certain quote unquote kickbacks. Now, the other section of this this game is you're kind of, after you've done all your worker placement, you've gathered all your stuff. You also have the Cliffwatch Tavern, and this is where you can gain quests. And the quests are kind of the heart of the game. They have certain requirements, so you have to have like a certain number of wizards or a certain number of rogues in order to accomplish that particular quest. It earns you money, earns you points, and then it can have also some ongoing effects if it ends up being a plot quest. That's something that would continue on after the fact. But as you complete these quests, you put them into your tavern, and you have those as counting towards points towards the end of the game when you when the game wraps up. Speaking of which, I think I mentioned it was 2 to 5 players. It only lasts 8 rounds, so you don't have a lot of time to get your feet wet, as it were. But luckily enough, even for me, again, simple guy, Lords of Waterdeep was a pretty easy game to pick up. I think pretty much midway through the first round, as I wasn't the first one to go, I was able to kind of pick up on the rules and kind of get my feet underneath me and really hit the ground running when my turn came around. It's got a lot of cool interaction as far as being able to kind of tell what your other players are doing and try and outmaneuver them. You know, again, only being 8 rounds, it has kind of a narrow focus that comes very, it basically gives off very few story elements. So there's not a lot of flavor text here, so that's kind of one of the downers for me. Again, being a huge RPG fan, I was really hoping to get a little bit more flavor text, a little bit more depth to the game than what I was getting. Now that's okay. Totally cool with that. But again, coming off of an RPG background, you're kind of looking for a little bit more. But keep in mind, this is really at a more 50,000 foot level, looking down on all the random denizens of a major fantasy locale. And ironically enough, what we ended up doing is that once we set up the board, me and my friends, once we set up the board, we realized, you know what? A couple of our characters in the game are actually very adversarial, and they're more along the lines of, how do we outthink one another? So what we ended up doing, and I think might be kind of an interesting thing for other gamers out there, is we actually use Lords of Waterdeep as kind of a mini game. So like, you know, if you go into a particular, you know, like your Witcher 3 or whatever, where they have the little mini games in the within the larger scope of the game, and we used it as a way to kind of do some character development and have those adversarial people learn more about each other and about themselves. So it was kind of cool because you start building strategies, you start building understanding of one another. Kind of an interesting way to go. So you're playing a game within a game as another person. Yeah, lots of fun. You can do that. It's Dungeons and Dragons. Why the heck not? Overall, the game is really beautiful, has really great quality to it. Wood pieces, the meeples there, the card stock is really nice, the board's really well designed and beautiful. It's almost as if you were taking one of the D&D maps from the game and just from the role-playing game and just bringing it out as a large game board. So really nice to see. So why don't we dive into some new stuff, shall we? I know the announcement came in early July. It was kind of like in celebration of the overseas release of the movie, but Attack on Titan in early July was picked up by Cryptozoic and Don't Panic Games. These are the guys that brought you that DC card game, among other things. They've got a couple of really great designers on there, Antoine Bauza and Ludovic Montblanc. They basically are looking for a 2016 release in the US, so I'm kind of stoked about it. And it's got a couple of interesting twists to it, and there was a very early stages preview of it at Gen Con 2015. So if Mike might have stopped by the Cryptozoic booth, he might have actually seen this and taken some pictures. So if he did, we'll definitely fill him up on the site for you. But in any case, the rumor out on the interwebs had it being that there was a vertical element to it. You know, games are always horizontal, back and forth, left and right, up, you know, whatever. But this one also had an up and down thing, where one player acts as the Titan, and then the others attempting to are attempting to fly around there with the multi-directional wire cables to try and take it down. So is that true that there's a vertical element? Well, yeah. A lot like that. If you spun by the Cryptozoic booth, they've got the early prototype out there. They got a monstrous foam reinforced Titan that stands tall, multiple tiers ranging from the calf all the way up to that sweet, sweet kill spot on the back of its neck. And the board is also horizontal. It's got it kind of where the guy stands is part of the board as well. There's measurements for the armies that are up, the human army that's up against him, and then his own damage, that sort of thing. And then in addition, there's also a human tower, basically kind of a place where they have cannons and they have emplacements there. But unfortunately, that tower is also a target of your friendly neighborhood Titan. Typical turns will involve the Titan going first, and he's going to end up getting two cards, one that he lays face up, one that he lays face down. And on these cards have certain action types, things that he's going to be able to do. Now, each card has defeat markers on there, meaning that the humans basically will need to stop the Titan from accomplishing these diabolical deeds. And they do this through rolling some dice. So they roll some dice, they come up with certain symbols ranging from a skull, which is bad, to swords, which is good for damaging those pesky skinless people-eating giants, and other things like cannons, tactics, that sort of thing. And what they'll do is they'll combine these elements to be able to defeat the action card that comes up. So there's that element. Let's say a card comes up and it needs a cannon, two swords, and a tactic. But when they roll their dice, the humans, they only got two swords and maybe two cannons. So they can't stop them from doing this, but they don't want to discard the dice, because they may be able to use that to at least damage the Titan, which is the name of the game, trying to ramp up those damage points and then make your way up to that nice neck area where you can chop them down once and for all. So there's situational items for an attack with a combination of the damage card and then the dice rolls for results. Humans win by killing the Titan, flat out. That's their winning scenario, or their victory scenario. Titans, however, get three. As they do, because they're giants. And number one, they destroy the tower, or they inflict enough army casualties, or three, they kill one of the players. Now, again, the Titan goes at once and then goes first, and the players get to go all at once, and then kind of pooling their tactics and figuring out what they're going to do, making sure their meeples are placed, that sort of thing. It's in the very early stages of development. They're looking for a 2016 release. It's been demoed in LA and overseas, and now, as I said, at Gen Con. So if any of you lucky ducks got to see it up close and personal, be sure to hit us up on Facebook at the Tavern. Drop us a line, let us know what you thought. Some of the pictures I saw, again, very early cards, laminated, that sort of thing. But the concept was there, and it sounds very interesting. So let us know. As a fan of Attack on Titan, I am really interested in this. But there's one other thing that I'm interested in as well, and it's by these same guys at Cryptozoic, and that is a game that's based on one of my favorite films of all time, Ghostbusters. That and The Karate Kid and Dune made up my summer back in the day. There was one year where I basically memorized all three of those films, and I could probably recite every line verbatim. It's crazy. But Ray and the boys are kicking ghost butts and hitting the early market just before Halloween 2015. Now those are for the people who backed the Kickstarter for the game. Then there's a wider release shortly thereafter. So it's all happening this year, very soon. So the game is action-oriented, it's episodic, you get to level up, and one of my favorite aspects is that it's cooperative. I do have fun with the with the point systems and being able to one up one another, that sort of thing, with the strategies, resource gathering, all that stuff. But odds are, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to enjoy a cooperative game just because it's so much fun to work together with folks and not get too much of that competitive spirit. So that's why you'll probably see me wanting to pull Pandemic or wanting to pull even Dead of Winter to a certain extent. But let's focus back on Ghostbusters real quick here. So again, it does have that big cooperative element. Everybody picks a character type. So either you're a Peter Venkman, you're an Egon, you're a Ray, or you're a Winston. And they traverse the board, zapping and trapping ghosts and closing the hellish gates through which they spawn. And you gain experience by character type. So like when Peter gets slimed, you get experience points. But like, let's say if Ray comes in and removes the slime off of Peter, he gets experience points. And again, it's kind of based on those character types. The figurines look pretty neat. As far as the different types of game pieces, they're kind of stylized versions of the team. In fact, it kind of makes me think of the cartoon series that was kind of cool back in the 90s. I don't know if any of you guys are old enough to remember that, but they did have a cartoon series. And point of fact, if you look at some of the preview sets for the new female-led Ghostbusters, you'll notice that one of them has the hair that looks exactly like the character in the cartoon. Huh. There you go. But let's get back to it here. Again, you get your figurines, you got some stylized versions of the team, you get a bunch of different types of ghouls and ghosts and other manifestations that are based on levels or classes. Kind of like, class level 3 vapors and that sort of thing. You also get the vehicle, the Ecto-1. And you get Mr. Stay Puffed. What did you do, Ray? Anyway, so Kickstarter folks get some extreme Ghostbuster figurines though. So if you jumped in on that, you'll get some extra sets, especially a bunch of matte color ones so that they're ready for painting. Within the game, you work your way through 4 different scenarios, and each of those results in a boss fight. You can build your own scenario, so it adds some replayability. And of course, when you're using different combinations of the Ghostbuster templates, then you get even more variation there. You have a pool of actions from which to choose. You can maneuver, or you can remove slime. Kind of like when you're playing other board games, when you have choices between certain actions. So you can have an action, you can have a maneuver, you can have another type of action that's on the board. And again, each character has their own methods of gaining experience and growing. And in fact, it's kind of cool that each character has a little card that has a meter on it, like the ectometer that they had that Ray was or Egon was famous for using. And you get to move that up as you bump up a level. It looks like fun, and research in this game has successfully lodged the darn theme song in my brain, which I cannot sing since we're on a podcast, and you probably wouldn't want me to do that to you. Yeah, so there you go. A couple of cool previews from the Gen Con floor, coming to a store near you. Ghostbusters again close to the fall in this year, and then sometime next year, Attack on Titan. So good stuff. Other new things that I saw, we were actually Mike and I were going to be talking about this last week, but just ran a little bit long in the episode. This one is called Downfall. The full name being Downfall, a story game about the end. And it's by an indie developer. Her name's Caroline Hobbs. She's done a couple of other games, but this one is basically what you would call a story game. Think of your fiascos, or even in a more raw form, Dog Eat Dog, which can be a very stressful game when it comes to story games. But Downfall has kind of an interesting take. It's on Kickstarter, and actually I'll link it in the show notes so you guys can go and take a peek. It's basically a phrase-based escalation, kind of like archipelago. Say that 7 times fast. You're kind of mixing. How do I describe it? How do I describe it? It's you're basically bringing a society up and then taking it down. You are basically responsible for designing an entire culture, a society, with their desires and their drives and the pillars of their existence, but you're also starting everything with a flaw. It's the deep-seated reason that is within your society from the very beginning, but ultimately results in its titular predicament, its own downfall. So you play with 3 players. You have a hero, you have a fallen, which kind of represents the antagonist, and then you have the pillar, which is indicative of your society. You rotate, which is kind of cool. You rotate through those players, so not a single person plays the hero. You actually all kind of transition to where you're getting a different perspective on being a part of the fall of this city or this society. So again, you bring up your society, you get together with your fellows, and you create the detailed set of traditions and practices and beliefs that hold this society together. And these are the pieces that you break during the course of the game. And like I said, during the gameplay, you work through a phrase-based escalation, which means basically, as you're describing these things, you're also thinking of the next phase and how that's going to fall apart. Why does it break down? So, for example, what if greed was the issue at hand? So this would be your Achilles heel. This would be the society's end, would be greed. You could go with something even more fantastic. What if it is a strive for perfection? That could be your core flaw of the society. And then you start building things around it. What were the traditions that would come from a central tenet, such as a strive for perfection or greed? Now, what kind of brought this one to mind is I just watched the film Interstellar. With Matthew McConaughey and a few other actors there. It's by Christopher Nolan, who did Batman trilogy, Inception, and it kind of has that certain mood that I would actually say tonally builds itself towards what Downfall is trying to do. It's asking you as the players, as the storytellers, to really delve into the core of a particular culture. It's asking you to get attached to it, to grow with it, especially as a hero. You're really passionate about defending it, but then at the same time, you become the fallen who is looking to bring it down and to bring something new out of the ashes. And then you're also the people, the very people that's kind of caught in the middle of these two really strong personalities. So one of the great things that comes out of this is extemporaneous play. Again, it's a story game. There's not a lot of components to the game itself, other than basic instructions on how you want to flow through the phases. But it really opens up for extemporaneous play, kind of like what I was talking about at the beginning with Shadowrun, is my experience of having a little bit more fun with extemporaneous play, but having that safety net of the module to fall back on. And in this case, you have the safety net of your fellow players and what you guys have designed as the game has progressed. Really awesome stuff here. Again, it's a great way for practicing your extemporaneous chops. It's got that sense of adventure. It's in multiple locations. The way they have this built out and how quickly the Kickstarter got funded. They have different locales that you can use, whether it's adventures, kind of like a fantasy setting. You have a sci-fi setting, a city, like a big megalopolis. A creation setting where it's kind of at the foundations of a culture. All of the funding goals, as far as from what I can tell, except for one, have been reached, but they are all set for their August 11th target, so they're going to make it. Downfall, a story game about the end by Caroline Hobbs. Take a look at it. Again, I'll include the link in the show notes to the Kickstarter page. It has a great description of what the game's all about, even has a demo video of a trio of them, including the creator, sitting down and playing it. So really awesome stuff. Definitely go over there and check that out. So yeah, three great games to look forward to: Attack on Titan, Ghostbusters, and Downfall, a game about the end. A couple of things that are on the horizon for myself and our dear friend Michael Perna. We're both going to be joining up on this Victoriana adventure for En-ROADS Plays. So our first meeting is actually going to be in the middle of August, maybe the 3rd week of August. And what we'll be doing is kind of entering into that character creation phase and accumulating all the data and the notes and the awesome messages that have been going back and forth. We'll get together and start setting up the tone and basically the prologue of the campaign. And if there's a good amount of material and we can get it edited up and looking good, then we'll release that out there for you guys to take a look at on our YouTube channel. In the meantime, I'll be releasing our last session of our Dungeons and Dragons actual play. We've got Baird Ironborn, Silas Sylvan Smith, and Kendrick Hillenspanner. Basically the short squad, as they've come to be known as, rounding out their adventure. Kind of bummed it's over, but at the same time left the door open so that we can always come back and revisit those guys. And kind of going along with my love of RPGs, I'll be putting together a new vlog series involving games of this sort. I'll be discussing a wide variety of topics ranging from like media and mediums, so like whether you're playing in person or you're playing online. Taking a look at some new games that have come out, character creation methods across different systems, that sort of stuff. So kind of a hodgepodge. We'll go for a little bite-sized episodes, and we'll throw those up on our YouTube channel here in the next couple months. We'll start issuing those out. And I'll try and get that onto a regular schedule as well. And then last but not least, I mentioned at the beginning, but I will reinforce that Mr. Perna should be hitting the internets with his take on the Gen Con experience. So be sure to tune in for an episode of bonus content coming to your ear canals very soon. As for me, this would be a little bit of an abbreviated episode just simply because there's only one of me and I only can handle half the content here. The other half is out there in Indianapolis doing his thing, which is awesome. But I want to remind everybody that we had a couple episodes back where we were taking a look at, what does it feel like to kind of hang on the promise of the Lord and his provision. And, I think we saw some awesome stuff coming out of TavernCon. And again, we definitely want to throw out our thanks for everybody who participated in that, all the prayers that went into support of the event, and flat out the financial support that came through, got Mike Perna on the plane, able to afford it, and get out to Gen Con and make our presence known as En-ROADS Ministries, being a part of that ginormous event. And it made me think of a part of 2 Peter 3:9, where he says, "The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance." And, it goes into the deeper understanding of, turning away from sin. I understand that is the full context of the verse, but it's that first line that really gets me. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. And again, his ways are not our ways, but it's just awesome to see him work, to see him make things happen, and to move in his people to get those things to happen, that we're so blessed to be his instruments here on earth. So once again, thanks everybody out there for your support. If you want to know a little bit more about what we do, if maybe you're a first-time listener or a second-time listener and you haven't done so already, head over to the internet, type in enroadsministries.com, and check us out. See what we're all about. We've got a couple of sections on there that explain what we do. There's obviously dozens and dozens of articles. There's links to our YouTube page, and there's also links to our Facebook group, The Tavern. Stop by, join up, get involved in conversations with the other regulars that are out there, and just have fun being who we are. And as far as other support, that sort of thing, you can find that on the website as well. So Thanks, guys, for your patience. Thanks for all your support. If it wasn't for you guys out there, I don't think I'd have been able to do this episode on my lonesome. But I'm looking forward to getting back in the chair with Mike Pernas so that we can sit across the country from one another and chat about geeky stuff and the Lord. So once again, thanks a lot, you guys. We appreciate all your support. If you want to get in touch with us, if you want to get in touch with me, email me at jeff@inroadsministries.com. You can log into Facebook and head on over to the tavern, and you can find us there. And actually, all that stuff really goes from the hub of our website, inroadsministries.com. So come by, check us out, email us. I'm still looking for artists that are willing to join up with our Victoriana effort to put out some artwork for the characters or maybe the scenes, that sort of thing. So if you're interested, definitely contact me. Again, go through the En-ROADS page or check out Facebook and post me up. I'll go ahead and put a bow on episode 106. And I'll thank you guys for your patience. Always remember that no matter how the dice fall, God is the game master, and the game plays on.